Good day, friends. Welcome to the Perpetual Notion Machine. I'm your monthly mad scientist correspondent, Wally, and with me is a fellow mad scientist, Mademoiselle Gearheron.
Hello, hello.
All right. We are proud to be here with my friend, who she's a being often goes on the water for solitude, codenamed Gearheron, now soaring over the radio waves. She's an engineer, a science lover, here to provide some insight of what it is like to be a woman in engineering, which remains, guess what, a very male-dominated field. 13 to 19% or so are women versus the other 95%. Wait, it just feels that way. No, but so she is here to perhaps share some for all of what it means to be an aspiring engineer and to do good work in the field. So welcome to the Perpetual Notion Machine, Gearheron.
Thank you, Ollie.
Yes, and we're talking about engineering here. How did you find yourself to be an engineer? If you like, you know, nature and stuff.
Well, when I was a little kid and people asked me what I wanted to be, I used to say that I wanted to be a rocket scientist because it was hard and it was nerdy and I always liked science and I always liked math. And when I decided to pick a major, I thought engineering just made sense because it's kind of science applied to life. And
rockets as well.
I mean, it could be. I decided that I wanted to kind of broaden my career options. So I studied mechanical engineering instead of aerospace, which I actually originally applied for. And in my career, I actually started off in an aerospace job regardless, but have kind of moved around to work in pharmaceutical environments, food and beverage, and currently I'm working on some consumer goods projects.
Consumer goods, and having to have a meeting at 8 o'clock for someone at 9 p.m., we were saying, it's the engineering divide, right? Working all around the globe.
Indeed, yeah. I was talking about how I was working with a client in Thailand, so they get the short end of the stick with meeting times.
So you mentioned aerospace, which, you know, as a Gearheron makes sense. Do you have like other like top three favorite types of engineering? Like what does engineering even mean? It's like they that engine or something? They that engineer?
You know, that's a really great question because I feel like when a lot of people picture engineers, they picture some old guy in a shop who's just tinkering with drawings and screwdrivers and making widgets, and that can happen. I think more often engineers make drawings that then turn into things like buildings. So for me specifically, I started off as a mechanical engineer where I would do sizing components, specifying parts for mechanical systems, and I kind of morphed into a process automation engineer, which means I write the software that runs machinery that manufactures things. So, for instance, for food and beverage manufacturers, something tells all of that liquid that eventually becomes beer where to go and heats it up, moves it around to various vessels.
This is very important science, as we know in Wisconsin, as the cheesehead beer drinking state that we are. You got to do your beer science well, otherwise you get schwill, you know. That's not what we do. So that's cool to hear.
Yeah.
So beer, are you like beer science, beer engineering too? Beer engineering?
You know, I'm not really involved in the beer part, but it is cool to see those breweries. And in terms of favorite things I've seen, I also went to a pizza making factory and that was pretty cool. I actually ate one of those pizzas that factory makes recently and it was delicious.
It's like robot pizza kind of, but it's all robot pizza, more or less. Okay, so you're Madisonian to these days. So what kind of engineering keeps you here? Like what? So you found some education and some success here as an engineer.
Yeah, well, actually, I am lucky that I get to work remotely for the most part. I could work anywhere, except for when I get sent to client sites. So recently, I had to travel for a consumer goods client out in Ohio. But really, it can be anywhere. A lot of firms these days have gone remote, although there are engineering firms in town as well.
That's, yeah, because you can do a lot with engineers and blueprints. But what do you think about, I guess, engineering in person versus... So when I think of an engineer, I think of the guy who has the white hard hat and is staring at a pit in the ground and telling the people what to do. And they're all just sitting there leaning on a shovel and being like, okay, I guess that's what, you know. So that's in person. That's live. I mean, there's just different dynamics if you're doing it in the field or doing it remotely. How is it now versus the before times, like the distant past when before COVID?
I mean, it really depends on where you're at. I think there's definitely more allowance for people to do the work that they would have done in an office from anywhere. But as you're saying, you know, when you're overseeing a project, you do have to be there, and that is a part of it. And you know, for my job, I'm expected to travel something like 25% of the time, which is actually pretty low for my work. But compared to, you know, your regular worker, I guess that's maybe not typical.
Like you're going to Thailand as well.
Oh, right? I don't think I'm going to Thailand.
Okay. Oh, really? Bummer.
No. they're going to have a local team do that, I expect.
So there's beautiful Ohio. The sushi is great there, I hear.
chili. It really depends on what you're doing. If you are in kind of the design stages of the project, you know, for example, projects that I've talked about, they tell you, well, we're not even going to have a building for two more years. So where would you go?
VRBO.
Indeed. Talking about how things have changed, at the time when everything went in lockdown, I was working somewhere that was very paper-based. We had a kind of rigid approval process for how you could make a change to any system, which was really the nature of my work. I was in kind of a support role where there was a manufacturing plant that basically needs somebody to keep the lights on. So if something goes wrong, it was my responsibility to fix it. And in that role, certainly someone has to be there, but it can be kind of a team of people so that someone's, you know, covering the ground all the time. Doesn't have to be the same person.
Could be Homer Simpson, who is, I believe, a nuclear engineer.
I thought he was more of an operator.
Oh, okay. Good, important distinction.
It is. And that's a very important role. You always need to design things with operators in mind. And imagining that the operators are Homer Simpson can perhaps be helpful in making sure you encompass all possibilities of what someone might do. One of the things, so I design interfaces that help people interact with machines. And one of the things is never have an idea in your mind of what you expect someone is going to do. There will always be someone who finds a way to run this thing differently, as hard as you try not to.
Never underestimate the power of the human mind and our just innate chaos, well intentions, and stupidity all combined to just throw things. You're like, why would you twist that? And you're like, well, it's a knob. Like, okay.
Well, I just always remember that things might seem obvious to you might not be at all obvious to someone else, and vice versa.
That's the science brain. It's like speaking in acronyms and using words like monocropic perennial, and people think you're going to know what that means. Like, who knows what that means? So what makes a good engineer then? Like, I kind of have the overlay for the design. So there's so many different types, but you're seeing this whole project. It's like this huge, long scale of design and implementation and understanding and management like the outro of the how does this thing destroy itself eventually? Like, what? It's just so much to think about.
Yeah. Well, kind of a lot to unpack there. I will say engineering is a team sport. So being able to work with people is very important. The other thing is, I think there's the people that do the best are people who just have this aspiration to build things beyond just a paycheck. It is a difficult field that's very demanding, and if you're just doing it for money, I think that makes it very, very difficult. But Some people just, you know, they want to see the success and they want to see the projects win, and they're willing to, you know, put in the hours to make things work, because, you know, you don't necessarily get to decide what it takes to get a project through the finish line.
And that's the goal. It's like to go walk under your own bridge or see that thing fly, whatever it is, right?
Yeah, to get your machinery roaring to life, making whatever it is.
Pizzas or beer, beer-flavored pizza or pizza-flavored beer.
Wind as well.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's right. That's the gear heron life, the life of soaring and standing in wind tunnels and stuff and watching rockets blast at other rockets that are, you know, that's like the double rocket, kind of.
Indeed.
I'm here with Gear Heron. That's right. A bike enthusiast and a woman in engineering.
I did bicycle here with my gear earrings, so.
Nice. You are triple geared up because you have like a fancy microphone and a headset. Like, we are live, friends. We're here in the studio. There are scientifically patterned mats on the wall that are silver and look like you could crash in, and that's for sound dampening.
And I'm just admiring some wiring in the corner, as one does, that was not installed yesterday.
You're like, what is that? I don't know either. that's not my job. My job is to tell you about science and try to have a good time with my fellow mad scientists, as we every month do. All right, so not a superpower, but it is definitely something special in the vast world where you're, you know, less than one in five. So what can you tell me about being a woman in engineering, and what can you tell about people that are women that might want to do engineering to stay engaged with it?
So I don't think there's some sort of magical lady energy that we all have. But one thing I will say is that the women who stick it out in this field tend to have grit and tenacity, because there is a little bit of where it can feel like a boys' club at times. And I think the reality is that as women, there is kind of an onus on us to make sure that we are seen the way that we want to be seen, which is, you know, hardworking professionals who can deliver results along with the men. And sometimes that's not the perception that we have, regardless of what we do. There are definitely people that come in with expectations of what gender roles are, and some people make that known in ways that are not enjoyable. And that is a reality that, you know, women in the field often have to face. I think the biggest thing is just learning how to live your life around that, and that figure out what you want to do and how you want to respond to situations that aren't ideal. And I think the thing is that, you know, I started my career around 10 years ago. And I think, you know, that was before a lot of dialogue about women's voices and women's experience in the workplace. And I do feel like I've seen a lot of things get better in terms of what communities are available for people, and just resources and networks that can help women stick together and support each other through times that might be tough. And, you know, one of the things that I would encourage any woman in the field to do, or really anywhere, is some places are going to be more supportive than others. And if you feel like you're in somewhere that's not the environment that you want, you know, there is the opportunity to look around and see something better, because there are places out there that are maybe not perfect, but somewhere that does treat women well.
That's true. And that's Madison's awesome for having some places that are really good. And then we still live in a pretty weird dystopian future. I love what you said earlier during the break too, that it's not like we need to drive women to be engineers, but I think it's like we need to encourage the fact that you can be an engineer. Like, I think everyone, if there's not a lady superpower, there's not like a, you know, a black or a white or a gold superpower. It's like the diversity itself is the superpower, when you can kind of bring those things together. And when that's respected and treated as a different perspective, something that's valuable, you can have some great breakthroughs. And I've also been, as a, you know, as a fellow in science, yeah, I've seen different shifts back and forth, and even every cohort is going to have its tendencies for how people mix. And we are, you know, we are humans. We have our tendencies to who we flock towards, either, you know, if it's our gender, if it's how we look, if it's how we think. So I think this is a time of acceptance. I think science is about that, and trying to find the strengths in other people. And I'm always gratified to hear that the walls are coming down, that people can be who they want, and they can study what they want, and they can excel in their careers. And I think we just need more of that in general in the world, and less hate, and more like, hey, that's a really good idea. Don't be like, hey, actually, that's a good idea, because no one likes that. Mm-hmm. So non sequitur, besides herons, like, what are other favorite birds and like water creatures for you?
I'm a huge fan of the mantis shrimp.
Okay.
Here's a funny...
Wait, the psychotic clown of the sea?
Yes. Okay. But okay, here's a dystopic future story for you. Oh. At one point, I was biking in mantis shrimp leggings with a phone in my pocket.
Okay.
And somehow this phone managed to send like dozens of Bitmoji lobsters to a friend of mine.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was... bizarre.
Oh, speaking of dystopian futures, you had a fun story about why engineering is fun and how people can screw things up.
I
used to be an aerospace engineer, right?
I did. And when you mentioned something about machines destroying themselves, that sparked a memory of my wind tunnel days, where my company at the time got involved in skydiving wind tunnels. And here's a quick question that I don't remember if I've asked you before. What do you think is safer, skydiving the traditional way or skydiving in a wind tunnel?
I'm going to guess skydiving the traditional way, because they're less close to a gigantic turbine. Well, yeah, golly. You've not asked me this before. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say jumping out of a plane is safer than being in a big, crazy machine.
I say yes. For one, we've been doing it longer. It's more regulated. There's fewer opportunities for failure. Mm-hmm. And... this particular wind tunnel catastrophe that I am aware of, there were a lot of players involved. And I think the biggest oversight was that the person who was managing the project was a venture capitalist who decided that he didn't think he needed to hire a professional for that aspect.
Sure.
So there were some parts that were specified to have the weak point be really anywhere except for the part where the air hits. And that spec was not met. Nobody noticed. They were installed. They failed exactly as expected. And that meant these big fiberglass parts ran through the fan, because this is a recirculating wind tunnel. And once that had happened, there was just, it was an enormous crash. There were fiberglass shards everywhere. Amazingly as well, the first time they turned this on, when this happened, there were skydivers waiting for it to start up.
Who are really safe and reasonable people.
Absolutely, absolutely. They did not feel any need to test this thing first. Anyway, so crash number one happens, and they repaired this fan by reinstalling a new 11-foot aluminum fan blade. Because, you know, the first one bent, and that was how I was first keyed into something was wrong, that they were replacing one of these enormously large blades that could not have bent itself. So they sent me there, and then eventually they explain, yes, this was in a crash, and here's why it looks this way. And they knew they couldn't balance it quite the same because, you know, they didn't replace the whole thing. And the moral of the story is that skydivers ran it at full speed when they weren't supposed to, and it destroyed itself again, and that was the end of the project.
Well, that's amazing. Thanks, everybody out there that's listening. Please support this station. Good night.